I mean, he's a very confident guy. I think that he does realize he screwed up last year, you know, with the stuff that he said on a couple of occasions. You know, and frankly, there's no way around that. I mean, the coaches told him in no uncertain terms, when you fail to catch a pass that you know is going to be a back shoulder pass, don't blame the quarterback for not throwing it in front, because that's how you caught him in Texas.
From our studios in Inwood, Manhattan, Cheesehead TV brings you two guys who like to think they know something about football.
Fresh off his appearance last evening on the NFL Network, Tom Pelissero from the Green Bay Press Gazette joins us. Tom, thanks for being here.
Anytime.
Tom Pelissero in the house on Cheesehead Nation.
Tom, so obviously you've got a much more diehard base to play to tonight, and we're going to try and get as specific as we can.
Absolutely.
First off, from your practice reports today, you're saying that Rodgers looked really sharp. I guess to start off with, sharp in deep, intermediate, just spraying the ball over the place. Was there something specific that you thought he looks better than last year at this time?
The things that always jump out to me, especially when you're going through the installations, you know, Mike McCarthy has said it before, some days the offense is going to have an advantage, sometimes the defense is going to have an advantage. What I always look for is when they blitz, when they're in the blitz periods, you know, how is Rodgers getting the football out and where is he going with it? And there were a couple of throws today that just jumped out at me. You know, there was one I wrote about in the blog, which was they blitzed off the right edge. So, in other words, Rodgers' blind side. And he whipped the pass. I mean, I couldn't even see Rodgers from where I was. All I saw was the ball come over the defender's head directly to Donald Driver. I mean, you're talking throwing the ball before the guy's even thinking about getting out of his break. And it was on the money. And then later, they bring a corner blitz again from Rodgers' blind side. And he spins and hits the guy in the slot, you know, in a third down situation. It's throws like that that you can tell that Rodgers is just so much, so far ahead of the other quarterbacks and really ahead of a lot of guys on the football field this time of year.
Nice.
Very, very good. And on those, you mentioned the blitzes from his blind side. Are these number ones? Are these like, is this one against one or is this mixing guys in and out?
It's usually the ones against the ones. That's generally how they run it. Basically, this practice structure most of the time is 3-2-1. In other words, the ones go against the ones for three plays, the twos against the twos for two plays, and then the threes against the threes for one play. But, yeah, it's all ones versus ones this time of year.
Excellent. Speaking of the defense blitzing or not, Nick Collins, obviously still not there. Do you see Smith from Pittsburgh making I guess, taking advantage of the situation? Is he standing out at all? I mean, obviously he knows the defense a lot better than most of the guys on the team, basically from where he's come from and the fact that he's been there the whole time. Is he taking advantage of that situation?
Well, I mean, it's tough to tell. Obviously, at OTAs, you know, it's funny. Somebody actually, I was standing there, and somebody asked him, do you feel like this is a situation that you can really benefit from? And he said, no, not really, you know, because it's June and it's shorts, and these guys are aware of what it is. You know, the coaching staff knows what Smith is capable of. Certainly, he's an athlete. I got to spend some time with him today, and, you know, he's a good talker. He's a guy who will definitely open up. You know, as far as on the football field, it's really tough to tell right now, but certainly he's running with the ones. Him and Rouse are running as the 1-2 safeties right now because Collins isn't here, and Bigby's been hurt too. But, you know, do I see Smith being able to get into the lineup? Probably not at this point. You know, it's tough to imagine that there's going to be enough of a change that that he'd be able to get in there. But you never know. I mean, the longer Collins stays away, the more he's hurting himself and the more he's hurting the team.
Absolutely. I mean, the knock, obviously, is that he's not there. He's not studying. It's a new defense. And his play seemed to taper off a little bit towards the end of last year. Speaking of the secondary, you wrote today that Pat Lee was looking good and making some plays. Mostly, was he blanketing guys? Was he playing zone? Was he playing man? What about Pat Lee stood out for you today?
Well, there's a lot of zone concepts in the scheme. You know, without breaking it down too much schematically, he just seemed to react well. He's picking up guys. You know, and frankly, he just made some plays. I mean, he jumped, I think one of them was a shallow cross to Donald Driver. He jumped in front of that, batted that down. There was another one that he really had to accelerate when he was lined up over the slot and batted a pass away near the perimeter. Yeah, I mean, the guy has all the physical ability. You know, there's a reason he was a second-round draft pick. They got to hope that he can at least come up and win that dime. And it's pretty hard to handicap right now who's in, like, the four or the five slot. But Lee's right in there. You know, really after the top three guys, you got Will Blackman, Pat Lee, and Joe Porter are probably the next three. And I'd say they definitely want Lee to at least be that number four guy. They'd rather let Blackman concentrate on returns and be kind of an emergency guy.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Sticking on the defensive side for just one more second. Matthews was out last week due to the hamstring. I guess he went early today, but then he had to drop out again. How serious is his injury? Are they addressing that at all, or is it just being careful?
Well, it was serious enough that they held him back for, I mean, he didn't practice again in the first week, and he didn't practice at all last week. But, you know, if you're only out a week and a half with a hamstring in May and June, it's probably not, you know, a significant strain. But, you know, he tried to push it today. I'm not sure how much he did yesterday because that practice was closed to us. But he didn't even make it into team drills today. It was something that happened either in the jog through or, you know, maybe in some of the individual drills where it tightened up on him. He was getting stretched out. Looked for a while like maybe he'd come back in. And, you know, at this point, I wrote it in the notebooks posted now at PackersNews.com. I would bet that they're going to be careful with him at least through next week's OTAs. I bet he doesn't do anything. They'll probably try to roll him out in minicamp, but it's really all going to be about how he tests out for the doctors.
Right.
So, Tom, I have a question, and I have to say, I'm really liking the work you're doing for NFL Network. I have to give you props because I think you're one of the better reporters that's going up there talking about the team.
I appreciate it.
I have to take one. Well, I have a question for you. Of the video you had up on NFL Network, I just watched it today, and you said that Favre, you know, it was talking about Favre, and you were talking about how he was instrumental to the 96 Super Bowl success. And you didn't say he was the most instrumental. I'm not really splitting hairs, but I was thinking, I was like, okay, well, that was about Favre. But I wanted to know, who do you think are the top three most influential people/reasons? So the people who were the most instrumental, to use your words, in the Packers winning the 96 Super Bowl.
Talking about coming up off the Super Bowl, who is most, not instrumental, but Corey's question essentially is the top three individuals responsible for getting the Packers back to the top of the NFL heap.
I mean, if you look through the 90s, the people who were there, Favre absolutely has to be on the list. You know, and really, if you say three, it's pretty easy. I think that you've got to say Mike Holmgren being in the mix, and then probably Ron Wolf as far as building that team. You know, if you look over the entire rebuilding the Packers as an organization over the past 15, 20 years, you'd have to throw Bob Harlan in the mix, too. All those guys played absolutely pivotal roles for this franchise.
So you don't put White over Favre?
No.
You don't put the 96 defense over Favre.
Tom, you and I are on the same page here. This is my co-host.
If we're talking about just the 96 team, I mean, that's a different sort of breakdown. What I was talking about was who brought the franchise back from where they'd been through the 70s and 80s.
I got you.
I mean, the most important position on any team, any scout will tell you, is the quarterback position.
Doubt.
The defense eventually can make a huge difference, but you got to have a quarterback.
No doubt.
Speaking of fiery and competition, who do you see? I know they're running Nelson and James Jones pretty evenly at camp, at OTAs. Who do you see ultimately winning that battle?
You know, I make this point every time somebody asks me that, which is I don't think that it's really a battle per se because they use those guys differently, and they're different sorts of receivers.
Right.
I think that Jones is the better receiver. He's got maybe a little bit better quickness, so when he's full speed, he's looked great. Jones is one of the guys who's absolutely jumped out at me. Just looking at him physically, he looks like he's a little bit leaner than he was, even when he was in really good shape in 2007. You know, he looks lean. He's moving so much better than he was at any time last year when he was dealing with that PCL or LCL or whatever it was in his knee. You know, and Nelson is a big guy. He's a good blocker. They like to use him on the perimeter and create some mismatches out there. I think that they'll end up using both guys. You know, I don't know that it's necessarily a number three, number four thing. You know, they liked when they went three tight last year using Nelson out on the edge because, again, he's a good blocker. They run a lot out of that formation. And also he creates a mismatch if you put a smaller corner on him, whereas Jones, I think, maybe could end up seeing more of the reps, in three wide formations, like your regular three wide formations. But, yeah, both guys are in the mix. Now, is there room for Ruvell Martin if Jordy Nelson keeps progressing as a blocker? That I don't know. I don't know what Ruvell Martin's role would be.
And a lot being made of the right tackle position with Barber. Just kind of, I mean, you heard McCarthy in his presser today, or if you weren't there, you probably read about it. He was effusive in his praise. Is this the real deal, or is he just kind of there because Giacomini's hurt and, you know, obviously McCarthy's not going to say anything bad about him, but, is Barber for real, do you think? I know it's hard to tell in shorts, but do you think this is a serious look, or is he just holding place?
I think it's a serious look, but really I get the feeling from the people I've talked to that it's more of a taking a shot with a guy who they have no place else to put him. I mean, if you want Alan Barber competing, you can't have him compete a left guard again because Darren College is in there, you know, for good.
Right.
And the right guard position, they really like what Josh Sitton brings over there and, you know, how powerful he can be on running plays. And as he develops more confidence, it sounds like he's really been showing that and getting into a flow again, kind of like he did last summer, you know, when he had a job one before he hurt his knee.
Right.
You know, where do you put Barber? You need somebody else competing out at right tackle because Giacomini's out. If Giacomini had been healthy, would they have rolled Barber over there? Maybe, but he wouldn't be getting the one reps. Giacomini would be getting the one reps. And
right.
I know there's strong feelings among some people over there that T.J. Lang is going to be the one who, when it's all said and done, is going to come on strong. Now,
well,
there's always strong opinions about rookies, you know, at this time of year. But there are some people who definitely think that he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, we have Sigmund Bloom from Draft Guys coming on later, and I know he's a huge T.J. Lang fan. He says the Packers got a steal in the fourth round. Well, we'll see. Most definitely. Jermichael Finley made a couple headlines last week, or earlier this week, with his new Twitter account. And as we see, you've come on board, Tom. Glad to see you on Twitter.
I am there. It was funny, too, because I talked to Jermichael the next day, I think, after I found his account. And
right.
then for like 24 hours, the top post on his page was something to me about talking to me, which it was just kind of completely random. So like today that Rob Domofsky wrote the story about Finley being on Twitter, the top Twitter was to me.
And what was – Domofsky was awfully dismissive of Twitter. What's going on? Is he a technophobe? Is he just, you know, what's going on?
You felt he was dismissive toward Twitter or towards
everything, towards Finley being on Twitter, Twitter in general, you being on Twitter. I don't know. I mean, I know lots of people who are anti-Twitter and will never get on it. My wife makes fun of me for being on Twitter. However, you know, I just was reading he was very dismissive of it. I just, you know, has he given you any grief over it?
Oh, no, I don't think so. And, you know, Twitter's here to stay. I mean, like it or not, it may be the disintegration of our society, absolutely. But, you know, it's not going anywhere. I mean, I'll be on it. I think I'm up to 500-something followers, and I've been on it about 3 weeks.
Nice.
Clearly people are jumping on it, and I know people have appreciated the instant practice updates and all stuff.
They're absolutely priceless.
Nice.
I think the issue with Finley being on Twitter is obviously if a guy in the past has shown that sometimes when he's in the heat of the moment, he'll say things that aren't the brightest, what's he going to be tweeting?
Right.
Well,
that's the first thing I thought.
You get into an issue.
Well, and what's his girlfriend going to be tweeting?
I know.
Or his fiance?
We all got to find that out.
His wife.
We all
got to
find that out.
She seems to be really racking up the followers herself.
Well, they want to give. It's good. It's for a good cause. They're going to give the money away, you know? That makes sense. What did you buy? Are you buying his mea culpa? Are you buying it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Finley's a guy who's going to talk. I mean, he's going to speak his mind, and you know, put it this way, guys, he's got very high expectations. You know, beyond anything that you would imagine as far as what he thinks he's going to be able to do this year. You know, just talking to him, not on the record, but just, you know, I mean, he's a very confident guy. I think that he does realize he screwed up last year, you know, with the stuff that he said on a couple of occasions. You know, and frankly, there's no way around that. I mean, the coaches told him in no uncertain terms, when you fail to catch a pass that you know is going to be a back shoulder pass, don't blame the quarterback for not throwing it in front because that's how you caught him in Texas. You know, go make the play. You're
exactly.
professional.
Well,
so,
and especially don't talk to the press about it.
I'm sorry?
I said especially don't talk to the press about it.
Yeah, you know, if you don't have anything nice, don't say it an hour after the game. Just keep your mouth shut. Yeah, it's a good lesson. But, you know, hey, we like the guys who speak their minds. I mean, without question, I'd much rather talk to a guy who's going to be honest with me. You know, with a young player like that, I mean, the guy's 21, 22 years old. You know, he's got a little bit of growing up, and he's got to learn that, you know, it's not going to be probably like it is in Texas where, you know, you're deified to an extent playing for the Longhorns. You're in a media market where there's a lot of attention. You know, I don't think that anybody's going to accuse the Green Bay or Wisconsin media of being the New York media, but if you say something stupid, there's going to be plenty of attention paid to it, absolutely.
Absolutely. Just a couple quick questions. Tom, thanks so much for being here tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
We'll throw a couple random things that we've had come in. Brian at Railbird Central wanted to know, Mike McCarthy talked about training safeties to play left and right instead of weak and strong. Does it continue that way during the season, or is it just a learning purpose? I mean, do they do that just for camp? Or is that just like a base of the defense?
I think that's part of it. Basically, the thing is with the way the safeties play in this scheme, they have to be somewhat interchangeable because on a given play, based on the alignment of the offense and motions and whatnot, the strong safety can become the free and the free can become the strong safety. Right. So by training them left and right, they learn just to see it from the vision point versus from the, okay, I'm the strong safety, oh no, now I've got to flip. This way they can just have the vision, be playing a position, you know, a spot on the field, and then based on the adjustment, they're not having to think about who's what. So you know, it's probably a learning tool more than anything, but really the safety is going to be a lot more interchangeable, and everybody's going to have to play in space, everyone's going to have to play in the box.
I think Packer fans just got really worried because you know, that's all Bob Sanders would talk about was how the safeties were interchangeable. So, and I recognize they're totally different schemes. I just think that sentence really scared some people.
Yeah, I don't know how much you really saw Nick Collins consistently up in the box under Bob Sanders. Bob Sanders' scheme was significantly different than what they're doing now. The volume of what they're taking on is certainly different.
Absolutely. And one last quick question before we go. A little before, you were talking about the media scrutiny in the Green Bay area. Obviously, there's lots and lots and lots of followers, both the Green Bay Press Gazette and your competitors, you know, the Journal Sentinel, and there's you know, Jason down in Madison. How much of your competition do you read? How much of it, you know, do you talk about with other beat guys? Do you all go out for a beer? You know, what's the camaraderie / competition like amongst your Packer beat guy brethren, so to speak?
Well, there's certainly people who are more competitive and more cutthroat than others, you know, without a doubt. You read everything because, or I read everything at least, because you just want to know what else is out there and you want to be able to find unique angles on the story. If you write a story on the guy and you take the exact same angle as something that was done 2 days ago by a different paper because you didn't know, then you're not doing your job and you're not taking, you know, the side angle and finding something new to deliver to readers who do consume everything that's out there. I'm sure there's, you know, other writers, guys who have been at this for 30 years, 40 years, who don't read other people because they feel that they have the authority and it's not official until they write it.
You know, and for, I don't know who you're talking about.
Names,
there,
but it's obvious.
I don't know who you're talking about.
There's people who do that. So, you know, everybody has their different way of doing it. And, you know, some people have been very successful doing it a certain way for a long time. I think I'm probably a little bit different being the age I am and coming into this one I am, where I take, you know, I'm on Twitter and I'm blogging and I'm doing all this different sorts of stuff because I, you know, I think that's the direction that it has to go, and it's not necessarily, you know, the traditional mindset. So, you know, connecting with bloggers, I don't think that's something that you're going to see some people doing, but I'm more than willing to talk to you guys.
That's awesome. We love it.
Yeah. You're so great for joining us tonight. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for answering our question. Sorry for the fact that it's not actually live, but we'll throw it up a little later and everyone will get to hear
it. It's going to go up right away, though. Tom Pelissero, ladies and gentlemen. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, fellas. See ya.
This week in the Packer Blogosphere!
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for sticking with us tonight. Wednesday Night Live here at Cheesehead Nation, brought to you by CheeseheadTV.com, Railbird Central, and Packers Lounge.
Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it.
On the phone, we have Sigmund Bloom from Draft Guys TV, DraftGuys.com.
Yes.
Sigmund, how are
Sigmund.
You?
Doing great, you know, and just like you all, I mean, it might seem like a downtime for the NFL right now, but we're just consuming every bit of information we can get from the OTAs, and people like Tom Pelissero are so nice to give us the eyes and ears of everything going on. So this is still a great time where I feel stimulated. I feel like things are changing in the NFL, and of course we're learning how the first go-round for all these rookies is going.
Absolutely. Speaking of the rookies, obviously that's why you're here. As I wrote on the blog, I'm a big fan, have been for a long time. I think you and Cecil just do a great job breaking down.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially a lot of college prospects that a lot of people may not be, they don't get from, like, you know, ESPN and the big places that focus on the top tier guys. Obviously, checking out your draft recap for the NFC North,
I gotta say,
not a lot of love for the Packers draft. I don't know. I mean, for certain later round guys, but I think you gave us a C or something. Well, what's up with that?
Well, I would say I softened a little bit, especially when I learned that they're going to run a lot of hybrid looks where BJ Raji is going to get to attack a gap and not be responsible for the classic Casey Hampton kind of role of just holding up two blockers, because that isn't what he does naturally. He likes to penetrate. He likes to try to beat his guy off the snap with a quick first step with good leverage, but he's not really that stout. He doesn't play to his frame, even though he's built like a Coke machine. He's easier to move than a Coke machine, so that's good. And the fact they're even lining him up at end in some of the OTAs, that's good. I don't like the Clay Matthews pick. We can talk more about that. I really do like what they did on the second day. I think they did a lot for the future on the second day. But when you're changing over defensive schemes and you've got two-thirds, you can bring in some players in a draft that was deep with outside linebacker prospects. You can bring in some players that can help pretty quickly, even as pass rush specialists. So, you know, it's all about Clay Matthews, and I didn't like the pick.
And we'll get to that. We'll get to that. So we'll stick with the first round for a second, the top of the first round, with the Raji pick. What were your thoughts? Were you... I mean, I know a lot of people thought it was a foregone conclusion they were going to go Raji once he fell to them. But everyone knows that Michael Crabtree was on the board. Did you think there was a possibility that Thompson would become the new Matt Millen and grab another wide receiver even though they were stacked? Or did you think there was no way it was always going to be Raji?
I expected to be Raji or another cornerstone player for the defense. Maybe Brian Arakpo as another player that would have made sense. Or even Robert Ayers, the way that he had soared up the board in a similar fashion to Clay Matthews as the draft approached. It wasn't a foregone conclusion, but I thought it was a foregone conclusion they would go defense. I wouldn't have really doubted a Crabtree pick at saying it was a terrible pick, just because I could see a team having him number one overall on their board and saying, well, if we can get the number one overall player at the ninth pick, how can we say no to that? Yeah. But I think there is a master plan here for the defense. Just these players, Raji and Matthews, are going to have to come along very quickly for it to work.
Absolutely. And my one big the thing I keep going back to with Raji, and you alluded to it in your opener there, is that, you know, he's not a classic space heater two gapper where he's going to just, you know, hold the line at the point of attack. You know, I've written it. I really wanted them to take Crabtree. I don't think, especially our readers, think I'm insane, which is fine. They're entitled to that opinion. But there's a lot.
I think you're insane.
There's a lot of footage on Raji of him getting pushed around, and that's at Boston College. I mean, you know, the NFL is going to be a whole another ball game. And yeah, if he hits that gap, like you say, if he knifes in there, he can create a lot of havoc. But he needs to hit that, you know, a whole heck of a lot more than he doesn't. And that's my question with Raji, is that is he physical enough to make that happen more often than not?
Well, that's the question. I think what we're looking at here is not the physical, but the mental side of the game, because physically, he's a rare specimen. I mean, he has that frame, the squat frame at about 6'2", 340, and the brute strength to be one of the few players who can play nose tackle on a 3-4, but he has the attitude of a penetrator, of a defensive lineman who wants to get upfield. So he's going to have to change his approach to the game. But I do think, again, with these hybrid looks and maybe even lining him up at end, they'll give him some snaps. You know, you reward him, let him do what he likes to do if he does what they ask of him. So that's going to be the real question, is how he changes his approach to the game. Because what we saw at the Senior Bowl was, and anybody who watched on NFL Network saw, one-on-one, I mean, he's more than a handful.
There
was almost nobody there that could handle him. Alex Mack was the one guy who could hang toe-to-toe with him. Otherwise, he made these guys look like junior college players. So in that setting, he'll flourish. But I don't think he's ready to be, as you say, you know, hang physically in the trenches with some of the you know, we're looking at, for centers now, you look at the class of centers, there were guys that were 6'4", 320, 330.
That's the thing. They're just getting bigger and bigger.
6'2", 290 was considered maybe too small to play center. and that's where we're getting now. So, I think he's going to definitely have a hard road at first, and we'll see how it goes.
So, okay. Well, we'll get – this is what everyone really wants to know or talk about.
This is what I want to know.
Is the Matthews pick.
Matthews hating.
You were there at Radio City. I was there at Radio City.
Sure.
When it was announced that Thompson had traded up, you know, Packer fans were elated. And then they found out who he picked, and I think there was a mix of elation and home. And then we found out how much he gave up, and then there was a whole lot of home. So you're not a fan, and you're not a fan. Explain why.
Well, it was basically pushing all in for – Clay Matthews. I mean, basically you're saying we'll give up the rest of our top 100 picks. We like this guy so much. And certainly I can see how you can get into that mindset with Matthews. He's going to be a coach's dream. He's going to work as hard as any player in the locker room. He's going to set the example. He's going to create the kind of culture that you want. And certainly when you watched him in drills at the Senior Bowl, and it all was really based on what he did after the season, he moved extremely well. You know, he has the versatility probably to play inside and outside. He can play in all the packages. He can drop into coverage. He can edge rush. But the thing is, a player that you would put that much capital on the table to get, you would expect there would be some sort of highlight reel or some sort of excellence in his college career. He was a special teams player for 3 years, and then even in the Southern Cal defense with Ray Maluga, with Brian Cushing, surrounded by all of these great players, he wasn't really a playmaker. Wasn't really the kind of guy that changed the game. It was basically what he did in interviews. It was what he did at the Senior Bowl, what he did at the Combine.
I was going to say, about the draft season for – I mean, his college career was, you know, unspectacular, like you say. I think he started to show a little bit late, but then, you know, the lead up to the draft is what really pushed him, and that's always a red flag.
I think it is. And also, I mean, on the other hand, you know, probably what really made teams fall in love with him were the interviews and the passion for football. I mean, one thing that will make you feel better about staking your reputation on a player is if they eat, drink, sleep, everything football. And that's part of the reason I think Clay Matthews really caught fire as the draft approached. We'll see if that translates. I just see Bobby Carpenter in him, a player that the Cowboys took first.
I see Hawk 2.0 is my worry.
Oh, come on.
Oops.
What do you see as the percentage chance, okay, that this guy is just a sleeper late bloomer, okay?
I think that there's at least a 20 or 30% chance that we're looking at a guy that really Ted Thompson is a visionary. I mean, that's another thing you have to look at here. There are certain scouting departments, there are certain personnel types that you say, well, I'm going to come to my own conclusions, but then if I see that the Giants reach for somebody, for instance, or the Patriots reach for somebody, then maybe I'll go back and reevaluate. And Ted Thompson is certainly one of those guys. We go to the Texas versus the Nation game every year, and he's one of the few GMs that goes to that game. I mean, he wants to be there, see the players with his own eyes. You know, he really wants to get a feel for these guys, so I trust him, but it is projecting. I mean, it's looking at the trajectory of the player's career as opposed to what they've shown you on the field, and I do think there's a chance that he blossoms into a real breakout player, but just on a basic level, he doesn't have the first step quickness to be a game changer as an edge rusher. Connor Barwin and Everett Brown, both of these guys fell to right around where the Packers' second round pick would have been. And these guys can come in and make a difference right away as edge rushers. And as we know, you know, look at these 3-4 defenses. You have to have that James Harrison, DeMarcus Ware edge rusher, because everything really goes, the externalities that these guys create, the way the corners and safeties can gamble, the way that the pass rusher on the other side, Sean Merriman's another great example. I mean, you took Sean Merriman out of the San Diego defense and it all fell apart. So that's what I think they're missing right now. I don't Aaron Campman and all the noise.
Well, I was about to say that's who their answer is for that player.
And, you know, we'll see. But Clay Matthews, I think, is going to be a very solid player. He's going to handle his responsibilities well. He's never going to make a mistake that costs the team points or big yardage. But I don't know if he'll make the kind of game-changing plays you expect out of a first-round pick.
Well, you mentioned Thompson attending Texas versus the Nation, and I think that's where you got the film on the next guy on the list. T.J. Lang is your sleeper. I mean, you're a big fan. From everything I've seen and read and heard, and explain to us why.
Well, T.J. Lang, I honestly think he's the complete package. The only thing he's really lacking is some sort of freakish physical ability, like a Jason Smith or someone like that. He doesn't have that, but that doesn't matter because I don't think that's really called for in the Green Bay offensive scheme, the zone blocking scheme. Anyway, what we saw out of T.J. Lang, really, there are three things that stood out. He's got great feet, great balance, great coordination. He's a good athlete. He's also very combative in the trenches. This is a guy who really relishes the fight. And you're looking at a player that at an 18-year-old true freshman started against Cincinnati as a defensive lineman. He started out as a defensive lineman. So he's got that combativeness. He really loves the war in the trenches. He relishes it. And then the other thing is the versatility. He can play all five spots on the offensive line. And these are the guys that save roster spots. These are the guys that save your bacon in the fourth quarter when your left mm-hmm. tackle goes down, because he has the versatility to do that. He has the versatility to hang one-on-one and take edge rushers out wide. He has the versatility to be a drive blocker against the run. I mean, he can pull and trap and move well. I mean, he can do everything you ask. And he has that great workman-like, blue-collar, lunch-pail attitude. We love the guy. I thought he was going to be a second-round pick, and I think they got a steal in the fourth round. I think you're looking at a 7 or 10 year starter for the Packers.
Well, I certainly hope so.
I hope so, too.
Someone else they're projecting, not this year, but probably as early as next year, is Jamal Meredith taking over for Clifton there at left tackle. I think I read that you were... You were surprised he fell that far. You thought he'd fall, but not that far. Were you surprised the Packers got Meredith where they got him? And what do you think they have in Meredith?
I was surprised. And, you know, I'm not so much going on the record. I'm saying someone told me. I don't have firsthand knowledge of this. But you notice with the South Carolina players in the draft this year, all of them seem to fall really far. Jasper Brinkley, Jared Cook, Emmanuel Cook fell out of the draft completely. And Jamon Meredith, without a doubt, was a top 50 or 75 physical talent. And you don't have to watch him for very long. And you can see that he has the long frame, the brute strength, the footwork to play left tackle in the NFL. And they're just aren't that many guys. It's just like B.J. Raji. There aren't that many guys that you could even say, well, maybe he can work out at that position. But then you look at Meredith, and they moved him inside because they have a big-time left tackle prospect. They moved him inside to guard this year, and the word was some teams had him as their top guard. But you see all these South Carolina players falling, and what we heard was that the coaches weren't having the most positive things to say about the Gamecocks players that left early. And the Gamecocks players, like Meredith, there was a reputation that he was soft, that he was a locker room lawyer. Right. I think they just got a steal. I think that Meredith is going to be a guy, and if anything, the fact that he fell gives him the reason to have that chip on his shoulder to prove the
doubter. Motivation, right.
Yeah, and I think the culture in Green Bay is going to be one he really takes well to. So yeah, you get a guy who can be a starting left tackle, and not just a starting left tackle, but an excellent one. He had the best punch of any of the offensive linemen that I saw at any of the All-Star games. When he landed his punch, he would stagger the guy across from him every time. And he had, again, the great footwork, and again, he could move inside and play guard. The versatility helps a lot. So Lang and Meredith, I mean, you're looking at two cornerstones of the offensive line for a long time to come.
Excellent. And I'm just going to end with my favorite Packer pick of the year. He was picked before Meredith, but I just wanted to save him for last because I love the kid. And I think you were lukewarm. Just you went about where you thought he would with Quinn Johnson, fullback out of LSU. I just think this is someone the Packers absolutely needed as far as a true fullback, someone who can just bludgeon leading guys coming into the hole in front of Grant or Jackson or whoever's toting the rock.
Especially compared to who we have currently.
With Corey Hall and John Kuhn. I love this pick. There's some dissenting opinions about his hands. I've seen that he's got great hands. I've seen that he has no hands. I don't know how much catching he did at LSU, but if this kid can come in and do half the stuff I've seen on his, the few highlights I've seen, he's going to be fantastic.
And he'll be a good player for the Packers. And it was the right position to address, and it will improve the offense right away. My contention with the pick is more of a philosophical contention, that I think that, first of all, there are undrafted free agent fullbacks you can get. Second of all, there are a lot of out-of-work fullbacks. The true lead-blocking fullback is an endangered species in the NFL. There are a lot of guys out there that can be picked up that have a great track record. And I think that Quinn Johnson actually will probably be a fine return on that fifth round pick. I think he'll actually help the team enough that you'll look back at the pick and say it was a good pick. I just look at all of the needs on defense, and we haven't even talked about the cornerback position with the two ancient guys. They have a cornerback, and they have to restock at linebacker. We hope that Hawk and Barnett take to their positions. We hope that Aaron Campman takes his position. But they have to, I mean, you want to be developing some players for depth, for injuries, and also because this is a high-risk maneuver, changing everybody and putting them in different positions that they weren't really drafted to play. And right. I just think that that fifth round pick, you could have got a player that would project to a starter 2 or 3 years down the line. Quinn Johnson will start now, and he'll help the running game. I just think on offense, Packers are set, and I just would like to see that pick used on the defensive side. But Johnson's an excellent player, and he'll surely become a fan favorite in Green Bay.
Absolutely. I think just real quickly while we're talking the aging corners, I think Pat Lee and Tremont Williams are ready to step in behind those two guys.
Especially Tremont Williams.
I don't think a lot of people outside Green Bay know about them.
No.
Maybe Tremont Williams because he made a lot of plays last year. He also got beat a lot. But I think that...
Every cornerback gets beat a lot.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
But I think Gregory's getting all combative.
Okay, don't knock Tremont Williams on this show.
This is all about Sigmund Bloom.
Okay,
We'll argue later.
Okay.
I think that's what... I agree about the linebackers, though. It's like, especially with the switch to the 3-4, I think... you're going to see a lot of guys who, I mean, they're playing chiller inside, and that makes no sense to me.
Right.
But, you know, we're going to see a lot of that. And that's why you have Capers saying he's going to do, a hybrid scream, at least definitely this year, probably into the future. I can see the contention, but like I said, I love me some bludgeoning fullback.
Absolutely.
Well, Sigmund, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, Sigmund, thank you so much.
Please visit awesome. DraftGuys.com and check out DraftGuys TV. They're simply the best at what they do.
And Football Guys. And the videos are amazing. They're amazing. You guys do something that nobody else really does. ESPN wishes they could do it as good as you do.
and if they come calling, ESPN, if you're listening, we'd be happy to make our videos for ESPN. But hey, thanks for the kind words. And, you know, you're passionate about football. We're passionate about football. It's just one big community here. It's a great community to talk to. And, anything I can ever do with you all, this has been a great experience. And this is a great show. I look forward to watching it. Just because y'all do a great job.
Cool.
when we throw it up, it's great. Thanks a lot, Sigmund. Have a great night.
Thanks, guys.
Sigmund Bloom. And he just hung up.
Oh, make sure
we gotta
continue
fix that
sound next week
on Aaron Skype. So there you have it, Packer fans.
I mean, what an action-packed show, and we've hardly had to do anything.
Wow,
this is fantastic.
That has to be the best show that we've ever had, and I've talked the least, which has to kind of tell you something.
It's got nothing to do with
and
that. It's all about booking quality guests,
dude. If we can get Sigmund Bloom and Tom Pelissero, that's amazing. I mean, I don't mean to tell. I mean, it's you guys. I didn't get them. These guys are. I mean, that both those interviews were good. I mean, I don't like to like. I don't know.
No. It's good. It's just
a weird.
It's just a start.
I'm not used to this on Packer Transplants.
All five of you out there will. We will appreciate it, but hopefully we'll be building as the year goes along.
I want to say something about a Packer blog, some guests we have, some live blog guests.
Well, we have one.
Well, we'd have two.
No. One only could make it from Packer Ranter.
Oh.
Well, but we do have Franklin Hillside in the house. He's been on Cover It Live all night.
I sent an invite out to Robert and Franklin, so I saw they were both on. I unfortunately don't have Cover It Live.
It's quite all right. Franklin's here. Thank you, Franklin, so much for joining us. Everyone should definitely check out Packer Ranter. It's hilarious. It's insightful. It's everything you want from a Packer blog. Definitely check it out.
Yes.
Franklin, thank you so much for being here tonight.
One of my favorite things about that blog, and everybody's going to laugh at me, is the pictures on the left, actually.
Well, Franklin's is up tonight. It's his avatar.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's very good. We're glad to see it.
Seriously, somebody buy me a computer so I can cover it live during the broadcast. Seriously.
Yes, please. Don't sponsor us. Don't give the show money. Buy Corey a computer.
Oh, did we tell everybody that we got approved on a live stream so we can have thousands of people come and see our black screen?
We got approved,
it's
and
awesome.
They shut us down. How does that work?
How does that work?
I don't know. I love it, though. I love it.
So let's go back and what do we have for polls? Let's talk about polls for a second.
Well, we've had which player takes advantage of an injured player in front of him, and right now, Jeremy Thompson is winning that. Although, I got to say, I don't think Jeremy Thompson is technically playing, you know, for an injured person. I think he was installed as the number one. I know people probably think maybe he was, you know, there for Clay Matthews, but McCarthy made it very plain that Thompson was running number one even before Matthews got hurt. So,
well, I got something that Yuck Nasty texted me today during practice, and he said that two people got in a fight, Campman and Barber.
Yeah, you know.
And I didn't get to ask Tom about that, actually.
Well,
because
I totally forgot to ask him about that.
I did, too. And so,
not that we had anything else on our mind. but, you know, we heard that Barber and Campman had a throwdown that literally Kamen was rushing and Barber like threw him to the ground and they had words. According to Tom Pelissero, he didn't see it, so he didn't think it could have been much of a fight. However, as Yuck Nasty pointed out, the press was on the opposite side, yeah, way far away
this
from
happened
where it
right
happened,
in front.
And it happened right in front of him.
He missed the shot, though, but he does have a shot. When we show in the marathon after the show,
right,
he does have a shot of one of them getting pushed down, and then he turned off the camera, I think, and didn't realize it was a fight. But that would have been the news of camp.
That would have been the fight between Barber and Campman. And I think Barber would have won that. That's just me.
Well,
there's
you
a
never
poll
know
right now. Barber or Campman? Campman wins the first round.
I'll take Campman over Barber any day. I'm sorry.
See, I would have, except Packers.com ran that thing of Barber training, and he's just a bad looking dude.
Not feeling it.
Yeah, well,
so
you know, that's
what
fine
are the other polls? Because we never saw any. I never.
Who
saw
will be
any
the
polls
starting right tackle?
And what did Cheesehead Nation say?
Giacomini is leading right now. Giacomini, who hasn't even taken a snap at starting right tackle, is leading the poll. I agree with Sigmund Bloom and Tom Pelissero. I think TJ Lang will eventually be the starter there. Perhaps not right out of the gate, but I think it's just a matter of time. Definitely sometime. He'll see the field this year. He's too good not to.
We will see you next week on next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday evening. Who knows? We don't know who the guests will be next
who
week.
Who knows what we have? We can't say. It's so secret we cannot say.
Although we did just let the Nick Barnett thing out of the bag.
Well,
but, you know.
No, a little birdie told me.
A little birdie. You get it? Never mind. Anyway, so ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great evening. We'll see you next week.